Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. There are songs you hear in your life that transport you to a certain time period or give you a special feeling. You associate those good times to the group that made them famous. Songs like I'd Really Love to See You Tonight, Nights Are Forever Without You, and Love Is the Answer. My personal favorite have that kind of effort on people. Those songs and numerous others have made John Ford Coley a singing legend. He has spent decades touring, writing, recording, and producing. John is most revered as half of the Grammy-nominated duo England Dan and John Ford Coley. He continues with an active roster, performing the platinum and gold records for audiences around the world. Classically trained on piano and an avid guitarist, John loves the craft and enjoys every audience he encounters. John recorded a live album while he was on tour in the Philippines with many of the hits, while also recording a CD entitled The Best of John Ford Coley. John's most recent CD is entitled Eclectic and contains all new material for an acoustic Americana album, available now at Amazon.com. I'd Really Love to See You Tonight appeared in the film Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis and Samuel L. Jackson. And his and England Dan Seals' song Simone was figured in the HBO's vinyl series where two actors portrayed John and Dan in the studio singing the song. In between the extensive road duty, John lives in the Nashville area, as well as the Charleston, South Carolina area, with his family, where he's penned a book on his years in the music industry entitled Backstage Pass. John Ford Coley is currently on tour on two separate tours, and one with Rock the Yacht, 2019, featuring Ambrosia, Stephen Bishop, lead singer from Player Peter Beckett, Water Egan, and Looking Glass. Please welcome singer, songwriter, guitarist, pianist, actor, author, and co-founder of music legends England Dan and John Ford Coley, John Ford Coley, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, John.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. I had to shorten that intro because you've done so much.
Well, you know what? I think the name of the group actually was not, I think you said England Dan and John Ford Coley. I think the name of that group actually was Mexican Dan and Juan Queso Frijoles. That was the real name. Or English Danny and John Portfolio, one of them. I guess it's it.
You know, you guys such a great name, man. It especially for like a Western movie, you could play the hero or the bad guy.
That's right. And that was my goal, you know, because I can switch out. Nobody knows which one I am that particular day.
That's right. Sounds like a sheriff and sounds like a bad guy.
Absolutely.
How's the tour coming along?
Tour's going great. We're having a lot of fun. Had good audiences. Playing with Stephen Bishop, like you said, Elliot Louie from Looking Glass, Ambrosia, just a phenomenal band. I played with those guys. I met them back in the Philippines in like 2000. We've been working together ever since. Had Peter Beckett from Player. Voice of Player, that's what we have in this thing, Water Egan. And I think we're going to be doing also one with Danny Lane from Wings and, you know, Paul McCartney and all those years.
Oh, wow.
So he's now a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, the Moody Blues.
That's right.
It's been a lot of fun.
I love these package tours, you know. I've covered Hippie Fest. I've covered the one with the Turtles, and you know, and also Ringo and his All Star Band. I've covered all those shows. They're a lot of fun. It's the best way to showcase that music, I think. You know.
Well, you know, you get a lot of songs, and the thing that's interesting is that somebody might come to it for a particular artist, and they've never heard of me, and then all of a sudden they like me. So you know, you're exposed to a lot of different kinds of music. It really is kind of a walk down memory lane. I mean, because there's so many acts, you only get so many songs. So I normally play four, and then I go back and just eat.
It must be great to hang out with the bands, you know, a lot of the bands you knew from way back when, you know?
Absolutely. Well, you know, you've got a lot of shared history. You've got a lot of people that, you know, connected us all up.
Right.
So it's kind of nice to go down that lane a little bit and discuss some of those things.
I was looking at your tour schedule. You're playing also a show, I think, with the Orleans, right, down the road?
Yeah, I'm going to be playing over Missouri with them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Orleans is a great band. As a matter of fact, when we did the first show of the Rock Tour, it was Orleans that was the backing band. And on that one, we had Gary Wright and Christopher Cross and the Fireball.
Wow.
Peter was on that one. Sometimes Al Stewart. I mean, they put in some good acts.
Yeah, I know the guys from Firefall real good. I had them all on the show, and I knew Orleans. And as a matter of fact, Orleans played a outdoor show here in Sarasota, and it's such a sad thing what happened to Larry, you know?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I played with Larry on a solo show about a month and a half, two months before he passed away.
Yep.
And I did not expect Larry to go.
Yeah, I didn't either. That's totally shocked me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it's really funny because I still use Larry as a wonderful example.
Right.
Because Larry and I were complete polar opposites politically.
Uh-huh.
And so we would sit there, but we were friends, you know? So we would sit there and we would argue, go back and forth. And then finally one of us would go, hey, you don't have a beer?
Yeah.
Let's go. You know, we're talking about music. He respected my opinion. I respected his. We just discussed stuff, you know? But we were friends, so it's like we just happened to sit on opposite aisles.
That's the way it should be, you know?
I think so.
I
remember one time there was a thing that happened, and John Hall from Orleans
was
a congressman at one point.
Yep.
And so I just didn't want to get into it because I don't like discussing politics with people.
Right.
And so one day I sat down. I would avoid him. I sat down after sound check to eat, and son of a gun, if he didn't sit down right next to me, I thought, oh gosh, man, no. And so he kind of starts talking the political, and I thought, okay, heck with it, man, let's just get into it. We talked. We agreed on about 90% of the stuff that we were supposed to not agree on. It was really funny. We got to be good buddies, you know? So, that was a fun time.
You know, that's the same thing that happened to me. I had him on the show, and I was saying, oh, hell, you know, let's not get too much into politics. I was trying to avoid it, and then we started talking, and, you know, he's a smart guy. And we agreed on a lot of things as well, you know. He's a racquetball player, which I am. You know, I invited him to play racquetball. But, you know, I'm going to mention the guy I can't stand, and I saw in an interview, you know, he was there on YouTube, John, and he was there with Stephen Stills. I don't think I could ever talk to Stephen Stills. That guy's I'm going to say he's a jerk off.
I tell you what, I couldn't talk to Stephen Stills because he married a Véronique Sanson.
Right.
Véronique Sanson was one of my favorite French artists. And he kind of made me mad that he married her. I could have done that.
Yeah, he knows nothing about politics. You know, the whole time, you know, he was going off about things that don't even exist. You know, like you know? Like the Tea Party.
Well, there you go. That's the system we all live under.
Exactly, which is sad. Yeah, I don't mind arguing or talking to somebody on the other side as long as they know what they're talking about, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Well, you had an interesting beginning. I mean, you were actually in a psychedelic band, right?
So we started off playing things like the Beach Boys and you know, all the current stuff that was then. And then we graduated up to the soul era with, you know, Wilson Pickett and all that, changed the names of the band. And then it ended up, you know, being, because we were a cover band in essence, and playing all the songs that were current. So we're playing all of the psychedelic stuff. Then Dan and I actually ended up kind of playing fusion jazz. But I tell you a funny story on that. When I was in the group of Southwest FOB, it was still the same group of all the years that we just changed names. And so we did a song. We played with the group at a place called Lumen, and it's called West Coast Pop Art Experimental Band. And they played a song called Smell of Incense.
Right.
We really liked it. So we adopted that song, got it, learned it, and actually made a somewhat of a hit out of it. We got like number 60 in the nation or something like that. It was kind of our small claim to fame. But one day, I'm talking with, because I toured with Three Dog Night a bunch of times, and I was talking with Jimmy Greenspan, who was a keyboard player in the band, and we got to talking about stuff years later, and I told him a story about, yeah, Dan and I did this song called Smell of Incense, and he went, wait a minute, was that you guys? I said, yeah. I said, hey, do you know the song? And he goes, John, I was the keyboard player in the West Coast Pop Art Experimental Band.
Wow.
Of course I know that song.
Wow.
And God, I've been kidding. Jimmy, I mean, man, you just kind of keep rubbing elbows with people, you know?
Was he a cousin, too?
No, but I mean, he might as well have been. Good guy.
Everyone needs to go on YouTube and listen to Smell of Incense. It's a great song. It's a really cool song.
It was, you know, one of those Black Latin Parachute songs.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. You met so many people back then. That must have been a cool time for you, huh?
You know, it really was. Because, again, you're out with people that you know, you've heard about or you've admired. And you have little group things happen. I remember the freakiest thing that I ever had happen was we had an engineer on the first record that Dan and I did. His name is Henry Louis.
Right.
And Henry was German, and, you know, he'd been in the industry for a long time. He was a meditation guy, so he'd get a little bit tired, and then everybody would break, and he'd do the meditation. So he was done with that, and it was just he and I in the studio, and waiting for everybody else to come back, and we just kind of, you know, making a conversation. He said, John, he said, how do you really, I mean, you know, who's somebody that you think is a really good artist now? And I said, Henry, I said, man, I like odd people. I said, you probably never heard of her, but there's this one girl that just knocks me out, man. I think she's probably one of the greatest lyricists and melody people I've ever heard in my life. I said, have you ever heard of Joni Mitchell?
Huh.
And he looked at me and he said, are you kidding me? And I said, no, man. I said, she's great. And he goes, John, I produce her.
Oh, jeez.
She's partying over here at A&M on Saturday. Come over.
Oh, man.
And so I went over and watched her record two songs on the Blue album.
Yeah.
Last time I saw Richard and All I Really Want. I just missed James Taylor by about 30 minutes or so.
Right.
As he came in. And you run into people like that all the time. So we opened up for Carol Keane when she was right in the middle of the Tapestry thing.
Oh, man.
They had us play at the Troubadour for a week with her. Then she took us to New York, to Boston with her. And then we ended up going to New York with Seals and Cross and Elton John. We ended up picking up a show for Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks and canceled out on Elton to do a Tonight Show.
Right.
And Dan Elton ended up taking us to England with him for a month.
Wow.
I mean, it was just such a magical time. Oh, yeah. You know, those guys everywhere, they were just some of the best guys, you know, Chicago, and it just went on and on. And so we had a really, really interesting little time there. Three Dog Night in Japan. It was great.
Didn't you play on the same stage with Led Zeppelin?
Yeah, we did. Eventually opened for them back in Texas.
Huh.
We were in the band, the FOB, you know, back during the psychedelic thing.
Man, oh man. Is all this in your book?
Oh, yeah. A lot of it. You know, the thing is the book is really a collection of the funny things that happened on the road. It's
right.
It's about drugs, sex, and rock and roll. I mean, you can read anybody's book.
Yeah.
It's just about the ridiculously funny things that would go on. And I'm thinking about either updating it or writing a new one, because I just have stuff happen to me on a continual basis that I just laugh at. And
yeah.
I tell these stories on the road, you know, on stage. And it's great to watch the audience connect to them and just laugh a lot, too.
Well, I try to get these stories out of a lot of artists, and sometimes they're reluctant because I can't say.
Well, I tell you, I sat down one time. There was a guy, Oliver Stevens, and he was in the band with us back in Texas.
Uh-huh.
And so he ended up coming out of California. He played with us and Seals and Cross. He played with Linda Carlisle, Randy Myers, all these guys. So we all had a little reunion back in Dallas a good number of years back. And so he and I sat with the other guys in the band, but he and I were the only ones that could connect. And I said, Ovid, man, I tell you, I'm reluctant to tell people stories anymore because they look at me like I'm the biggest liar in the world. And he said, John, I don't tell anybody anything. They look at me the same way. I don't, but we actually did those things. So he goes, I know, but you just can't tell anybody. They don't believe you.
I love a good story, though. Even when I do the interviews, if I can get one funny story, I'm happy, you know?
Well, I'll tell you one that's not in the book.
Okay.
It happened to me. I figured out going to Baltimore one time, a couple of years ago, we were playing at the Ramshead. We used to deal with Terry Sylvester from the Hollies.
Yep.
Terry and I used to do a thing with Jimmy Griffin out of Bread. And so, Jimmy passed away, and
yeah.
Terry and I occasionally to play together. So I'm and I figured out why Robert E. Lee never attacked up in Maryland. And it was because within inside of 15 minutes of crossing the border, he and the entire Confederate Army would have been irretrievably lost.
With
or without a GPS. There's no way to find anything up there. So anyway, I finally get over to Annapolis where I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go into the town, the GPS stops, and I come to a circle, and it's got a big church in the center. And so there's four streets, four directions, but there are no street signs. So I'm going around and around this thing. I mean, I felt like I'm forever condemned on the circle line. And I just went around this thing, must have been 30 times. Finally, I see this guy over on the side. He's sitting on a park bench, and by golly, the guy's playing a banjo.
Mm.
I thought, he's got to be local. He's got to know which way I'm going to go. And so I rolled down the passenger window, pulled up to him, and before I could say anything, he yelled out, "Don't quit now, kid. You're in second place."
Oh, jeez. That's funny.
It was funny. I got to write that down.
Yeah, write that down for the next book.
Yeah.
You know, Maryland's my old stomping grounds.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Did you finally figure out how to get out of there?
Finally, yeah. You know, after there was a tornado that hit, I was in a place in southern Maryland in Waldorf, and La Plata, Maryland got hit with a major tornado, tore the town apart. And then we had the incident with the, you remember the sniper, that guy used to hide?
Yeah, Molov,
yeah.
Saw him something?
And that was it for me. I said, I'm getting out of here, man. And then my daughter wanted to go to FSU, so that's how I got out of Maryland. But, yeah, I was actually a DJ, a top 40 DJ in Annapolis over there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you know that church in the town with the roundabout over by the Rams?
Yes, I do. I used to go to Ramshead all the time. Yep. That's a cool club.
Yeah, I played that one time with Terry. That's the only time I've played it.
Yep. Here's a question for you, since you're from Dallas. I have to ask, where were you when Kennedy got shot?
I was in my ninth grade drafting class with Mr. Smith.
Wow, you remember.
My mom actually worked at Sanger Harris downtown.
Right.
She was in the shoe department, and she stepped out to see him when he passed by. And so then when he passed by, she went back into the store. He turned the corner, and that was it.
So did she see the whole thing?
No, she didn't see it.
The shot.
She just saw him as he passed by in the motorcade.
Yeah.
She went back into the store.
Wow.
But I think everybody that lived in Dallas remembers exactly where they were when that happened.
What did school resume the next day, or was that all?
No, they let us out.
They let you out,
that's
right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's another thing to remember.
Yep.
I mean, we always storyline our lives with that incident, you know? Where were you
going to
that time?
Well, the thing is that, you know, we were kind of young. I was in the ninth grade, so
right.
I was 14 or so, 15 maybe.
Yeah.
And they didn't really register for us. We weren't involved in politics at all, so it was something that we had never heard of other than the Kennedy assassination. And we were all really familiar with that.
Yes. Yeah.
Other than that, no, we were just kind of like, oh, really?
Yeah. Well, when it happens in your own backyard, you know, it's something.
Yeah, there was a stigma that was attached to that for a really long time because people associated Dallas
right.
with that assassination.
Yeah.
So no matter where you went, you know, when you said, well, I'm from Dallas, it was like, oh.
Right, exactly. Well, you guys, you know, made so many hits, you know, and I was on the air when you had most of those hits. So I, especially Love is the Answer, I played that thing over and over. I love that song. And
yeah, I think of all the songs that Dan and I did, that was probably our favorite single.
Really?
And, you know, all these other songs, the way that I look at it, is God just kind of reached out and kissed us on the head. And
right.
So I'd like to take credit for it, but somehow I don't think I had much to do with it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you guys made Todd a lot of money with that song, huh?
Todd made us a lot of money, too, and he gave us a good song.
Yeah.
So I was always a Todd Rundgren fan.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, he played down in the Bacchanal a couple of years back, and
right.
I went over and saw him.
Yep.
He just played by himself, piano, guitar, sometimes, you know, vocal, sometimes computer, and he's still the most memorable concert that I've ever been to.
He's a nice guy. I've had him on twice, you know, and
yeah.
Really nice guy. You know, he'll sit and talk with you all day if you want. But
there's a lot of really good people in this industry that, I mean, Todd should have been a whole lot bigger than what he was.
Yep.
And you just don't know why things happen the way that they do. But I'm so thankful for that song because, again, it was such a classy song to begin with.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm very thankful for that.
And
Thank you, Todd.
And, of course, I'd really love to see it tonight. I guess that's the one that really got it going for you guys, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a very interesting one because when we heard it, you know, Dan and I really wanted to write our own song.
Right.
And this was one that was done by Park McGee.
Right.
And so they thought the same, too. We thought it was more of a female song. And so then we did it. And, you know, the truth be told, most people don't realize that when you go into the music industry, you're actually trying to make a living.
Yep.
And I think so far we've made like $1.90 a year on all the songs that we have done. So we did this one song with Parker, and all of a sudden I saw that first royalty check, and I found myself going, Parker, hey, buddy, what else you got?
That's funny. That's great. Well, a lot of people made a healthy living just on cover tunes, you know?
Absolutely, they did.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is you can't write everything on your own. Periodically, you'll have somebody that has that gift. But, I mean, if a good song comes your way, take the good song.
Yeah, yeah. I had a conversation with Tom Rush, and, you know, I just love it when you have, a guitar player up there on stage by himself with a story. You know, there's nothing
yeah.
better than that, you know?
That's what I do now.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Having all the stories, all these things that go
right.
on, plus having the new record.
Yep.
I mean, at one time, we were searching for songs to play, so you end up having to do a cover.
Right.
Now, I'm searching for a way to fit all the songs that I would like to play in the hour and a half to 2 hours that I play. Normally, they've got me up with 90 minutes. I very seldom ever play 90 minutes.
Right.
I normally play closer to 2 hours.
Yep.
And I still don't get all the songs that I want to play, so I have to switch them off.
Well, your latest album called Eclectic, I gave it 5 stars, man. It's a lot of music. You got two CDs out there. You've got Vince Gill on the album. You got Colin Ray, Jamie O'Neill. You got a lot of great players on there. And the women, the women are awesome.
Well, the thing that was really gratifying is that, you know, when you call people up that you've known, you've worked with, and some of them, you know, you're kind of nice friends with, and you ask them if they'll do it, and they immediately go, "Who do you want me to call?"
Right.
I mean, that's really a very gratifying situation. And it's like Vince, when we wrote that song, I waited for a long time to get together with him to write that one song. And it changed a little bit because it was supposed to be two guys were fighting over the same girl. And we kind of changed it. And Vince is known for singing on everybody's records.
Right.
Well, I didn't ask him to sing. I asked him to come and play.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really excited about that because, again, he's such a terrific guitar player. To have somebody ask you to come up and play is better than singing.
Yep.
So he was very happy about that.
Had a lot of favorites. Here We Are Again. I love that tune. Nice piano.
That was written with Bill Champlin from Chicago. That was the oldest record on that, the oldest song on that CD. 1982.
Your vocals were great. Could have been a hit back in the top 40 days, for sure.
When I played that song for Kyle, the old producer, after the night split, he said, "John, he says, man, why didn't you do this when you and Dan were together? This was a great song for you guys."
Yep. Yeah, that's a great tune, man. I loved it. Another fun track, Cottonmouth Grove, Scat Springs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Little slide guitar.
The thing is, it's called eclectic because when Dan and I used to go to the recording companies, when we'd play our songs, they'd look at us and go, "Well, what are you guys? Country, folk, pop, classical, rock? What are you?" We go, "Yeah, pretty much." You know, and so it didn't take us into a hole. And it took a long time. So this album is that way. I mean, you got Here We Are Again. It's got one flavor to it, and then Cottonmouth Grove is very swampy.
Right.
And then the thing with Vince is, I mean, you know, it's kind of more country deal, and it's just all over the place music. I tell everybody that this album has everything but Lithuania and Disco and Polka from Backbeat on 5 and 7, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, the musicianship is there. I mean, you know, it's not overproduced like music is today. It's just good music, you know. Plain and simple. I like your collaboration. Is it Lydia? Is it Sannikova?
Lydia Sannikova.
Right.
One of my favorite people. She's a Russian girl.
Yep.
And I met her when she was about 19. And I thought, you know what? I'm staring the new Sade.
She's great.
She was in a group called Bering Strait.
Right.
Girls, Natasha, and I mean, I absolutely just adore that girl, and her voice just knocks me out. So I asked her to do two songs on the record. And as a matter of fact, she and I did a song a couple of years ago, and I'm thinking about going back in and doing a new one. It was one called, what's the name of it? Anyway, she sang it on the demo, and I love that demo so much. I'm gonna record this thing, but I'm gonna have her sing it.
Oh, great. That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
And I'll sing harmony to her.
Yeah. Wow. You guys make a great duo. I'm telling you.
Yeah. I mean, the voice is glass.
Yep.
And she's as sweet as she can be. I was one of the sponsors for U.S. citizenship.
Oh, really?
I wrote letters and stuff for her. So I'm hopefully getting to hear from her someday. She's truly a phenomenal artist.
Yeah, I noticed her right away. I noticed some other things about some songs. Dreaming All That You Got, to me, in the beginning, sounded a little bit of Steely Dan. There's that eclectic thing you're talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. There's some other things. People said, you know, that one or another kind of sounds like Bruce Hornsby. I said, I've got tapes that can prove that I was playing like Bruce Hornsby before anybody knew who Bruce Hornsby was.
I believe that.
So,
yeah.
I've been doing that stuff for a long time.
A long time, yeah. You know, it's funny when people are spotlighted, you know, like you and Dan, and, you know, sometimes they forget there was a past before that band, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And when you dig in deep and say, yeah, this guy's been around since the early 60s, you know? And,
absolutely. The thing is that we pass a lot of that up because you don't really hear them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they come up and people go, well, where are they? You know, I've never heard of these guys before.
Yeah. You play piano on this as well, right? On these tracks?
Yeah, I play on the piano on this.
You play beautiful piano. Well, you're classically trained, I know, so you can play anything. Yeah. To Feel That Again was a gorgeous track. That one and Wildflower Eyes, I love both of them.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was one of the acoustic side of things. And actually, the guy, because Colin Ray sang on that song, I'm sitting here drawing blanks on songs, there's so many of them. But the guy that wrote that song with me is Colin Ray's piano player, Gino Sage.
Huh.
And one day I was in Los Angeles, I was going to Bakersfield, I think.
Right.
And on the bus going over to the Carpenter place, I struck up a conversation with the lady and her husband. Well, she said, well, did you ever know Gino Sage? And I said, I did. He worked with Colin, and he and I wrote a song together. And she went, Gene died about a year or so ago, saving a woman that was drowning
wow.
in the Caribbean. And
oh
then
gosh.
He saved her, but he drowned.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
What? I had no idea.
Yeah.
And then when Colin came over and he found out that, you know, he was singing on the song that Gene and I had written, he kind of got a little teary.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, so. It's kind of interesting the way things kind of come full circle.
Yeah, it is. The other song, You and Lydia, On My Own, another beautiful, beautiful track. And,
That's one of my favorites on that. It's a very moody.
Yep.
Yeah, almost, well, sometimes I kind of get in kind of some of my, what I refer to as ecclesiastical kind of a mood. It's a pretty song. I do enjoy that song, and I love her voice.
Yeah. Like I said, man, you guys are good together.
Well, thank you.
You really are. I wanted to ask you about Quiet Victory. That's a song for the Holocaust survivors, and
right.
It's an instrumental. How did you guys come up with it? That? Wasn't that done with you and Dan?
No, not at all.
Oh, not at all.
Holocaust.
Uh-huh.
But this one was one. What happened was I study a lot of history.
Right.
And then in the show, the Holocaust is one of my time periods. And as a matter of fact, I met quite a number of survivors, and I friends with a number of children of survivors, mm-hmm. and I study in the synagogues all the time. I'm a believer, but I love to study in the synagogues, so mm-hmm. I'm around that, and one day I was reading a story about a man at Auschwitz,
right.
and how he, every morning that he would wake up, he would go, I won. And he survived another day. I won.
Huh.
And that so moved me, and I thought, you know, it's a quiet victory. And so that instrumental song came out of that one story.
That's interesting. Yeah. Huh. You know, there are some idiots today that don't believe that happened.
Yeah, well,
gosh.
There was this old guy that, I actually met him at the synagogue. And he had been, he was a 21-year-old lieutenant under Pat, and he was one of the liberators of Buchenwald, and he was Jewish.
Yeah.
And so he said, here I am trying to explain to, you know, 17, 18-year-old kids about what we're seeing here, and he says, I'm shook. And he looked at me, and he says, after Buchenwald, I never took any more prisoners.
Mm.
And I said, huh? He said, you know what I mean? And I said, I do. And he
says,
I didn't take prisoners after Buchenwald.
Wow.
So it's, you see a lot of things. So when people say, no, I've got another friend, his father was at Buchenwald as well. And
uh-huh.
He showed me a bunch of pictures, and I made copies of them. And you go, come on, guys. And you sort of, you know, Yad Vashem sometimes. I mean, like I said, I've studied that for a very, very, very long time, mm-hmm. but Yad Vashem in Jerusalem. You go through there, I was numb
mm-hmm.
about a third of the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys I was with said, quick, come over here, I gotta show you something. I went over in the cocoa section, and he said, the man right there, that was my mother's uncle.
Huh.
And I went, jeez, man.
Wow.
Gosh.
Huh.
So.
Yeah, Gene Simmons and his mom had an, I know she just passed recently. They had an interesting story. I think they let her go because she could do hair or something. But they, I think they killed her mom or his grandmother.
Well, I was telling somebody, a friend of mine, sent me the book of the Nazi Titanic.
Right.
About Jack McConnell. And I've heard about it, but I wasn't really familiar with it. It's a floating concentration camp.
Yeah.
They used it in the movie that they were trying to make called the Titanic.
Right.
It's supposed to be a propaganda piece. But, I mean, man, it was the most terrifying book I've ever read.
Really?
I've read a lot of that time period and the formation of Israel and things like that. And, man, that book just shook me to my core.
Wow.
So.
Huh. Yeah, my father-in-law was stationed in Germany. He was in the army. And he showed me some pictures. He was in the infantry, you know.
Yeah.
World War II. And, you know, he showed me pictures of dead German bodies stacked up, you know, way up in the air. He showed me a lot of stuff that I was really surprised at. My dad, I take care of my dad. He's 94. He was a Marine Corps vet. He was in Saipan and Okinawa.
That was the other ugly side.
Yeah.
Both sides had to be horrifically hard. But, I mean, when I look at what the Marines went through over there, jeez.
I know. Greatest generation, you know. That was the greatest generation. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here. That's for sure.
No, that's true. And the thing is that we don't recognize still what they did.
Yeah.
And I'm a very big pro military guy.
Right.
Because again, most people do not get the respect that they deserve.
Yep.
So we always thank them. I put soldier in the range for those that were in Vietnam when I played. And you know, there's some places that people just don't appreciate that at all.
Yeah.
And there are other places. I mean, I always say it. I think, well, I'm probably going to make a couple of people angry. I'm not trying to. That's not the object of the exercise. But
right.
It's just honoring those. Because, again, like you said, hey, it would be a different world if those men hadn't gone out there and done that. And they didn't want to go. Come on.
That's right.
They wanted to live their lives, too. But this got thrust upon them. So.
You know, I just can't imagine being like in Normandy or something, and being on the beach, being shot at, you know, getting hurt, and waiting for the medic.
My dad was a medic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and a hospital worker and stuff. And so we were talking to the guy the other night because, again, when you're in battle, you made rooms 1, 2, 3, 4, and you see the rooms. But Daddy told me about, you know, the times that they would go down to the trains and take the bodies off, and when they open the door, they're going to be wounded off. And so I thought, you know what? He's getting this from every angle. He's getting it every day.
That's right.
Just comes out.
Yeah.
And he talked to me, you know, about, you know, assisting in the amputations from frostbite and his first autopsy and things like that. Mm. And you go, my goodness, man. And then you don't have any questions as to why now you remember him always out taking your guard.
Those guys were amazing, you know. They were really amazing back then. They didn't carry a gun, did they, the medics?
Oh, I think some of them did.
Yeah,
if I were a medic, I'd certainly
hell yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're out there to save lives. And you know, I was talking with a guy not too long ago. He was talking about what the code was and everything. And I said, well, you know what the number one rule of the war is, don't you? And he said, well, you should do it. And I said, no, the number one rule of the war is you come home alive with all your body parts intact. That's the number one rule.
Yep. That's it. Mm. Just can't imagine.
No.
John, I wanted to, you did some acting, didn't you?
Oh, I did. I had a good fun time with that.
You and Susan Blakely?
Susan Blakely, our kitchen scene ended up on the cutting room floor.
Uh-huh.
It was really funny because here I am, I'm making out with Susan Blakely, who is an absolute doll.
Yep.
I mean, I love Susan.
I agree.
She's a sweetheart. But her husband is sitting right across from the other side of the room watching this, and I'm going, oh, man, come on, stop.
Oh, jeez, that's tough.
Yeah, my wife is pregnant back home, and I'm going, oh, man.
Yeah, it's tough. I'd feel the same way. And you push Corey Feldman down the stairs.
Yeah, I pushed him down the stairs. I actually threw him down. When I got there, I was supposed to be scheduled for 3 days.
Right.
And 2 weeks later, I'm still sitting there and haven't had scene one. So my first scene actually is with Corey, and I'm supposed to just kind of throw him down on the ground. Well, he's all bodied up. He's got pads on underneath the shirt and everything else.
Yeah.
And I just did the old karate thing and grabbed him and just put him on the ground. And the only thing they hear was, and the guy looked at me and said, John, maybe you ought to do it a little bit more gently. And I went, yeah. So that's what happens when you get 2 weeks worth of pent-up, frustration here. So.
Yeah.
But Corey was a good kid. I got along with both those boys really well. Corey Haynes, and Corey Feldman.
Right, right.
You run across some really good people.
Yeah. Did you like the acting gigs?
I really did.
Did you?
It's kind of like, I've had people ask me, do you like music or acting better? It's kind of like saying, do you like your mom or your dad? The folks. Yes. I enjoy them both. The thing that's great about acting is you get day clips.
Yeah.
And so, somebody, they've always got new jokes, and you got 2 or 3 days. I mean, my favorite story was the fact that we were recording on Scenes from the Gold Mine, the first film, and the girl that gets kicked out of the band was Pamela Springsteen. It was Bruce's sister.
Really?
And so she comes in, she got 2 days worth of work, and she and I hit it off like brother and sister. I mean, it was like we were cloned at the hip.
Mm.
Just a sweet girl. And she was sitting there telling me, I've been trying really hard. I'm trying to break out from under Bruce's shadow because everybody knows me as his sister.
Right.
And it's not as easy being his sister. So I'm working really hard. I'm training. I'm studying. I'm doing all the things, taking as many jobs as I can get and stuff to perfect the craft to be believable. And so the next day, she comes running in and she sees me and she runs right up to me and she goes, John, I talked to my brother Bruce last night. He knows who you are and he loves your music. He said he'd love to get together, maybe ride with you sometime, maybe pass and sing something together sometime. And he told me to give you his number. And I said, really? And she said, no, I was just happy. But tell me, did you believe me? I wasn't looking really hard.
That's funny.
I can see it now. Rolling Stone. John Ford Coley kills Bruce Springsteen.
That's funny. You did a, it's funny because America's Most Wanted came. I had a business in D.C., electronics, retail electronics, and we had some section there with like cables and wires and things. America's Most Wanted came to me and said they wanted to film in my store. And I turned them down. I said, I didn't want you guys here. They were going to pay me, but not enough, But you played a drug dealer who was killed by his partner, right?
And that was a real kind of interesting thing because I got the part.
Right.
I auditioned and I got the part. And so we were preparing on that Sunday morning to shoot the first film. So we're up where the murder occurred. And I literally, I'm lying in the guy's blood because I was one of the guys who got killed by the guy that they were looking for.
Right.
And so we're in the trailer and a policeman comes in and he goes, John, he says, man, he says, I'm really sorry. He says, I had no idea this was going to happen. But Vance's daughter, the guy Vance I was playing.
Right.
So his daughter is coming. She wants to tell you things about her dad.
Mm.
I thought, oh, man.
Yeah.
How do we do this?
It's heavy.
Because, again, I'm looking at all the police records on this guy, and this guy's he's not a good guy.
Yeah.
He's breaking teeth on women and doing all kinds of drugs. And so I get with her, and she wants to tell me all the great things about her dad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how am I supposed to remain true to the character that's been presented and then not destroy this young lady's, idea of what her father was.
Right.
And it was a pair. That was tough. But they actually, it was one of the fastest captures. They got the guy in like 90 minutes.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So the thing is that he was in custody a whole hour plus before he even showed on the West Coast where we were. So, I mean, that was a great thing.
That was it was the most fastest capture in the show's history, is what I understand.
Right.
Yeah. That's great. You did a wonderful job then.
Somebody turned him in.
Yeah.
He was in custody.
Wow. And one of your last films, I guess, was Christmas in Hollywood?
Yeah, that was fun. I'm supposed to be, a rookie cop.
Right.
So I guarantee I look like a rookie. And so we're in this, and for some reason, it was a serious role, and I think everything turned into a comedy. So that was fun. That was a fun day. That was a Bernie Higgins, the guy who did Casablanca.
Right.
Not Casablanca, yeah. We had it on the ballgamical. He was the director on that. So the first time that I'd met him, although we had mutual friends.
Right.
And we had a good time on that show.
Bernie Higgins, was that Key Largo? No.
Key Largo. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good song. Good song. Are you still doing any acting, or do you want to do any more acting?
I needed to come so long. I just had a friend that told me that. I turned one down last year because it was a thing called Bill Tillman and the Outlaws or something, and I just didn't have the time to do it because we were touring every day, and they have a shooting schedule. But I've got one that might be coming up. A friend of mine wrote a book about, I can't think of the name of it, Jack Grossman, and it's about a young girl that was a Holocaust survivor, her story.
Right.
And he wrote to me the other week, and he said, start practicing your Russian. I think, that's going to be very, very good.
That'll be interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Anne Frank, as a kid, that's one of the stories you read. And for the life of me, all these years, I did not know she was killed in the camp. I didn't know that.
She died in Auschwitz, and she didn't die too far out from the time that Auschwitz was liberated. They pulled everybody out of there.
Didn't she die from sickness?
I think so. I'm not really that familiar with the story. It's kind of drawing a blank. They kind of start to run together, but I think she might have. I don't think she was killed.
Yeah. I thought she got away. That's what I always thought, but...
Yeah. I had a couple of people that I knew that had been on the death march.
Really?
One of the guys was in the synagogue, and she was in Charleston. And I was always kind of nervous about talking to him.
Uh-huh.
He had a survivor tag on his coat. And so one day, just before we moved out of Charleston, he was sitting, I was sitting down eating kiddush for lunch, and he sat down next to me. And he's got like 93, 94, something like that now. Right. So I just kind of started talking to him, and I said, well, what did you do when you came to America? And he said, I was a CPA.
Hmm.
And I said, so you were in accounting? He goes, nah, cleaning, pricing, and alterations.
You can only say that when you're 90-some years old,
Absolutely.
That's great. You are a true Renaissance man, Not many people I can tell that, because you also wrote television themes, right?
Yeah, a couple of them.
Man, oh, man. You wrote, let's see, something with Dr. Pepper, I think.
Dr. Pepper, we had James at 16.
Yeah.
Did a thing with Paul Newman on... Keep Your Smile, when they were trying to make coffee,
right,
not just a luxury drink in Japan.
Really?
The one that I got the biggest kick out of was recently, they send us requests all the time to be in films, and I normally just sign off on them because it's free money, the way I look at it, it's mailbox money. And so they had this thing, and it was called Fear the Dead, or Fear the Walking Dead, or something like that. And I laughed, and I went, geez, man, I'm going to get a zombie movie. Okay, I hate zombie movies, so it's fun. So anyway, they sent me a deal, a trailer on this Fear of the Dead. It's up on YouTube now. Hmm. And in the middle, people killing one another, killing zombies. They're stabbing them. They're shooting them. They're doing everything. They want blood and gore everywhere. And then all of a sudden, I'd really love to see you tonight. Starts up. And I'm looking at that going, what the double hell is that, man? It's like, who banned? Who signed off on this thing? So it's like, I never thought the commercial that they did on when they were trying to get everybody to start eating baked potatoes in Canada, and you got the baked potato and the sour cream and the butter, you know, on the conveyor belt going up to the person to check out. I thought, I'll never get over that in, but for me, this Walking Dead thing, that took it.
That's funny. Man. Yeah, I was never a big fan of the Walking Dead stuff either, you know?
Yeah. I just don't watch TV that much anymore. You know, I mean, I'll pick up occasional thing on Netflix.
Right.
Or TV, and just don't do it.
You know, I could see you being in big demand now, though, with HBO, Netflix, and you know, because it's a kind of a resurgence in television. You know, I mean, you know, mainstream regular cable sucks, and they're on the way out, man. You get a Roku, and you're in business. You get anything you want. You binge watch. You know.
Well, you know, the last thing that we were actually on in that regard was the vinyl series,
right?
And it was really just such a fun day because. I hear about it, and I go, well, okay, that's kind of fun. They're going to use the Simone. So I get a call from the lady, and she said, because I was talking with Dan's manager, Tony, mm-hmm. and he was telling me about all of it. And so I get a call from the lady, and she said, well, you know, we need a license for the song, Simone, and also a likeness release. And I said, well, do you need a likeness release?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, there's two guys that are going to be playing you and Dan in the studio because you're going to be singing the song.
Right.
And the producer's going to be there and stuff. And I said, wait a minute. You got two guys playing Dan and I in the film? And she said, yes. And I said, okay, here's my terms. I'm not going to sign anything unless you get the guy that plays me to be like a younger version of like Robert Redford. It's straight in my teeth. And so she's laughing. And so, you know, it's really funny because Tony comes back and he goes, I don't know, John. He says, this script, man, they're beating the hell out of you guys. And I said, yeah, well, I read it too. And what I'm getting, the producer is a real jerk. And that's what they're really trying to promote.
Yeah.
And so, they called the writer and he said, no, man, don't pull out. He said, John's right. He says, we're showing that the producer is really a creepy guy.
Right.
And that was the one, it was like the third series. That was the one that Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
Almost, you know, seems like he's going to kill him.
Right.
And, I mean, so Danny's family's really upset, you know, the way that Danny was portrayed. He said, they beat us up. And I said, man, they beat everybody up.
They do.
Nobody got out of that series alive.
Yeah.
So they just fucked on everybody. So I didn't feel like they were just picking on us.
What was Mick Jagger was involved in that or something, right?
Yeah, he and Martin Scorsese too.
Yeah, I'm surprised, you know, with Mick involved that, you know, because, you know, I'll be honest, a lot of the characters, they didn't look anything or act anything like the real people, you know?
Well, the thing is also, that series went off in a year.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good series.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was brutal as far as how they treated people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you can't have that kind of dirt and desperation all the time. You expect people to have any connection to it.
Well, I'm a real aficionado of music, man. I go way back, and I take everything to heart, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that, you know, during that time period, I mean, it was really funny, because I was talking with one lady, and she said, John, she said, man, she said, that stuff's really great. And she said, was the music industry like that? And I said, no, they were sugarcoating. It's a lot worse than that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I did the thing, when I did the series from the Gold Mine film, I mean, that was brutal. I mean, it was Joe Pantoliano from Sopranos,
mm-hmm.
and who was that? Alex Rocco was in that guy, that Mo Green and The Godfather.
Right.
He was my friend. That was how I ended up getting in the film. Steve Railsback from Charles Manson and Helter Skelter, and Timothy B. Schmidt was the bass player in the band. I was the drummer. And so, it was, like I said, it was pretty dark.
Yeah.
And we went down to a film music.
Right.
Music industry is not like that.
Right.
It's a bad representation of what the music industry is.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that, I thought, ah, great, man, all my experiences have been null and voided by you. So it's nice to know that some writer who's never been in it has a really good eye-opening understanding.
Yeah, exactly. You know what was a good portrayal was when they did the Beach Boys. The actors that played the Beach Boys, they did a pretty good job on that. You know which one I'm talking about?
No, I didn't. I pretty much stopped watching a lot of it.
Yeah.
Again, it just got, they're trying to make the guy crazy. And
right.
Stuff. So I just kind of bowed out of it.
Yeah.
I don't even own a copy of it. I guess I should get a copy of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really funny. I had people ask me, what was it like to have somebody actually play me?
Mm-hmm.
In a film.
Right.
I remember this interview in England. And I remember telling him, well, I don't know if any of the girls that I went to school with that are saying, wow, I wish I'd have gotten him.
That's funny. Oh, man. John, here's a question I ask everybody, and I get an interesting answer from everybody, surprising answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish like the movie
I'm sorry, what was that again?
If you had a wish, like Field of Dreams, I always read, like Field of Dreams, the movie, because Doc Archibald Moonlight Graham and, all that, he had one wish and he wanted to go back to play baseball again. But as a musician, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would you pick?
I mean, there's a lot of people. If I had one wish to go back, it would be the fact that when we got in there, we kind of got involved in the Seals and Cross plan.
Yep.
And we didn't really get out. So my one wish would be able to get out of that and start writing with a lot more people.
Right.
I didn't pick that up until about 83 after I left the two sisters, us and Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wish that I'd have gotten out with more people. I think Bill Champlin and Terry Chater were two of the guys that I worked with. But I would have loved to have worked with a whole lot more.
Jim Seals, Dash Cross, and what happened to those guys?
Well, Dash is, he's actually raising horses out in West Texas.
Uh-huh.
They didn't play together for a long time after that. Jimmy was playing with Dan for a while. They had a thing called Seals and Seals.
Right, I remember that.
Jimmy ended up, I think he's pretty sick for a while. I haven't really kept up with Jimmy. I haven't talked to Jimmy since Dan's funeral.
Uh-huh.
And, everybody kind of goes off on their separate ways at a certain point. You can't revive it. I know that one time when Dan had gone into the country field, we had the record that came out on Rhino Records, Best Of, or the Very Best Of, something like that. And so I talked to Dan about doing it, kind of going out and kind of working off of that. And he said, well, it's kind of fear that it might confuse people, his country career and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I saw that movie. Yeah.
Okay, so we had the opening song,
uh-huh.
And they got about a guy named Phil Claypool to sing it.
Right.
And so he was on Curb Records, and I was introduced to Mike Curb, never met him before. And so he looked at me, and he said, So he said, yeah, it's more like being in the mob. You put the blood up, you know?
Yeah.
And he, man, he's looking, I said, you've always got your fingers in it somewhere. He's looking for a way to get away from me at that point.
Right.
You know, he's a suit and I'm an artist and we just don't connect. But I thought, seriously, man, you've always got your fingers in it somewhere. You're doing something. I said, yeah, I wrote the song.
Mm-hmm.
And he went, uh-oh. And that was, yeah. But it's like, you know, this eclectic CD that I've got, those songs are from like 82 until the last one, which
yeah.
is Wild Horses, that I wrote literally, this is the last song that I wrote on this. And you've got all these songs, you're always doing something, you're just not doing it in the public view.
Right, right.
You're always playing, you're involved in film, I mean, you're writing a book, you're doing something, you're not mm-hmm. sitting still, but because you're not in the public eye, you're not on the radio, people pretty much think, you're not doing anything. Your career's gone, and
yeah.
you're probably, you know, doing something that you really don't want to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot more people are listening to blog radio now. It's getting really, really hot. So,
yeah.
And people.
Well, I think, you know, even especially the older style
yeah.
of music.
Exactly.
You've got a lot of melody.
Yeah.
And people are bless their hearts for YouTube and things like that.
That's
because
right.
they keep a lot of us alive.
You got a lot of stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's so easy now to do the research, you know, and find songs that you've, I'll look back at your past and pick up some songs that I've never heard before, you know, from albums. And this way I can reference when I talk to you about some albums maybe that aren't as popular. But YouTube's a great tool. It really is.
Well, I mean, you know, I was really thankful because I don't keep up in a manner that I should, and I'm in the industry.
Right.
I'm off on my other things. And one night I was watching a thing on Netflix called Ranch.
Right.
I kind of got interested in it. I thought it was a pretty good series.
Yep.
At a certain point, it stopped. But one night, it comes up on the credits, and I don't generally watch the credits.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this one song, and I'm listening to it, and I went, man, who in the world is that guy? He can sing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I liked the song. And so I couldn't get to a chorus that I could lock anything down
right.
or a title. But there was one line in it, Speed Trap Camp. And I thought, that's worth a shot. And I put it up on YouTube. Kid by the name of Jason Isbell. Never heard of it.
There you go.
And yeah. I'm sitting there listening to all the things that he's doing. And I happened to look down at the date that this thing was put up on YouTube. And I went, 2013?
Right.
How did I miss this kid?
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, that's some of the best stuff I've heard in a while.
It happens a lot. It happens a lot.
So, because he wasn't mainstream radio or
right.
he wasn't on any of these other things. And,
yeah.
And, I mean, Jesus, there's a lot of people out there that I find on YouTube that
yeah.
just knock my socks off.
It's funny because I always criticize mainstream radio because, you know, I'm from the old school. But now what I do, my other job, I buy airtime from all these radios, mainstream radio. I work for a company called Circuitalia. It's a traveling circus. And they got a new show called the Paranormal Circ, which is really cool. You know, it's all about paranormal and it's scary and it's a rated R show and everything, but we're all over the country and I buy all the advertising on all these mainstream radio shows, so it's funny that I ended up back in radio that way.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, man, radio, I think it needs a resurgence because, again, when I was a kid growing up and even when Dan and I were on the radio, the DJs were kings.
Yes, they were.
And they somehow it got lost.
Yep.
And the big stations bought everything, and it went from the top 40 to the top 10, and just got really lost.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, it's like one night I played for this one guy, and he was really kind of angry because his name was Greg Kill,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know who he was. And so they said, well, you know, it's on Jeopardy and this song. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know the songs. I knew the song. I'm like everybody else. I know the song.
Right.
I don't know the artist.
Right.
And so he was really angry at me because mm-hmm. I said, well, I didn't know who he was. And it's like, look, about the time you came out, the DJ stopped announcing the acts.
Mm-hmm.
okay? They would play four, five, six songs, and they would never tell who it was.
Yeah.
So occasionally you might get lucky and hear the name, but I mean, fortunately, we were before that, so every time that we played, it's, hey, it's England Dan, John Portfolio,
right.
You know? And it felt great.
Well, plus it was fun to say your name. England Dan,
yeah.
And John Ford Coley now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was fun saying that so.
And besides that, it took up time, you know, instead of the carpenters, you know.
Yeah.
Two of them crossed.
Yeah, I was at the tail end of the last really good time for me. I was at like late 70s, early 80s, and you know, that was playing you guys. And we had, you know, it was a nice eclectic mix. Donna Summer, you know, we had New Wave coming in, the Cars, you know, Rupert Holmes, you know, it was a good time, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good time.
Somebody new, so there's always good music coming out.
Right.
You can choose what you want.
Right.
But, and then about that time, too, they also did a little separation in the station. So country went country.
That's right.
You know, you didn't hear, you know, a mix of you know, Led Zeppelin and then Kenny Rogers.
Right.
It just didn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you know, the big thing. Back then, we weren't allowed to play more than four spots in a row. That's where it got killed. Now they, you know, you lose yourself in commercials. You don't even know what station you're listening to. You know?
Well, the thing is that the commercials have become such an irritant because
yep. The
attorney business is really shot up because
Yep. Everybody's
afraid of getting sued. So you've
Yep. Got
a 30-second commercial, but 29 seconds of it's the disclaimer from the attorney.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah, it's sad. It really is. I want to mention some of your dates, tour dates. I've got like five different websites, music sites, YouTube. I mean, I'm all over the place. I'm a one man show, so I'm gonna put up these dates on all the sites. But I think your next show is on August 15th. Is that right?
Right, in Hyannis, Chief Continuity Camp.
Okay, is that a yacht show?
No, that's Rocky Yacht. That was gonna be with Ambrosia League, Peter Beckett from Player, and Elliot Lurie from Looking Glass.
Okay, that's at Cape Cod Melody Tent in Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, August 16th. You've got another date there, as a matter of fact.
Yes, and that's the same people. That's
yep.
going to be in Cohasset, Massachusetts.
Right. August 17th.
So all Boston area kinds of.
All about, yeah. August 17th, you're going to be at the Golden Nugget. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, down in Charles, Louisiana.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Let's see, I'm picking out some good dates here. Community Theater.
I think that one's got Stephen Bishop on it as well.
Oh, really?
I had
Stephen on the show. He's a good guy.
Yeah, Stephen is a good guy. He's funny.
You'll be in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, in Broward County.
That one got canceled.
Oh, it did.
The Radius Club, that one of the guys from one of the bands couldn't play.
Okay.
So because they had already played in that area.
Right.
So many days before, or so many days after, something like that.
Well, that's good to know. So you're not going to be there. You got Biloxi coming up August 23rd.
Yeah.
You got Atlantic.
My people.
Yeah. Yeah, Atlantic City. Coming up?
Atlantic City. I think that's going to be, we're playing Morristown as well. That's with Denny Lane from Wings and, Wings and,
Moody Blues.
Moody Blues.
He's always
been rocking on Hall of Fame. Denny's a good guy, but
yep.
Denny bunch of times.
Let's see, September 13th, you got the Yacht Show, I believe. That's going to be,
No, September 13th actually is the deal. It's the Fall Fest in Squamicus Beach in Westbury, Rhode Island.
Oh, in Rhode Island.
Be, I'm playing with the band, a full set. That's with the Criers.
Okay. All right. Got you there. And you're going to be back in Florida, hopefully this is right, Saturday, November 2nd in Ocala?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ocala.
Yeah, that's not too far from me. That's about an hour and a half. Yeah.
I'm doing a songwriter on the round thing in St. Petersburg on the 1st.
Okay. In St. Pete, really?
And also doing about three or four dates of another Rocky Yacht thing. It's going to be Bernie for Ambrosia and Mary Harris
uh-huh.
for Ambrosia. And then we're Peter Beckett
Right.
And myself. Doing that. We're also doing another one up in Long Island on the 7th of September. That one's the only new person there is Robbie Dupree.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're doing another one in, it's the 26th of September in Dayton, Ohio. Okay. That's another rock.
Yeah, just had a tragedy there. That's a shame.
Yeah. And then I've got the thing at where is it? Wildwood, Missouri.
Missouri? Yep.
With Orleans.
Yep. Have you ever played Branson?
I have. Yeah. A long time ago with Jerry Sylvester.
Okay.
Yeah,
I figured that'd be a good place to, you know, play a few dates.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, I enjoyed my time when I was there, and they had a really nice theater. So,
John, anything else you'd like to promote or chat about? Can we cover it all?
No, you know, I think you've really done a very good job. You covered a lot of bases and areas.
Thank you. Appreciate that. You're a great musician. You got a great voice. You're certainly one of my heroes. Love playing you guys on the radio when I was doing my top 40 gig. You know, the tour you're doing, there's two tours. Congratulations on that. The Rock the Yacht Tour in 2019. And plus, yeah, I think didn't he start this tour in Clearwater, Florida at Ruth Eckerd? Was that?
Yeah, we did. About 3 weeks ago, back in July.
Yeah.
Yeah, July 10th, and then we went to Dallas on the 14th.
That's a great place to play, Ruth Eckerd. Good fans.
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed playing there.
You got good fans.
I got to see a lot of nice people there. Yep. It was really funny. There was a guy that I got into the dressing room back to the sound check, and all of a sudden, one of the guys from the hall comes over, and he's got another gentleman with him. Yeah, two gentlemen with him. And the guy's got a folder, and he says, "John, can we talk to you in private?" And I thought, sure. So he went in, and they said, "Do you know the name such and such?" And I said, "No, I didn't ring a bell." And they said, "Well, he's been asking about us, says he knows you, says we've got some great concerns about him." And they showed me his picture, and I looked at him, and I went, I don't recognize him, really. And so then they were talking about, "We're going to keep a guard on you tonight, because this guy didn't seem to have both oars in the water." And
really?
I went, "I know this guy." I said, "He was a cop."
Uh-huh.
And he was in Pennsylvania. He was a highway patrolman in Pennsylvania, and he escorted us around at the Football Hall of Fame in 1978.
Right.
The guy goes, "You got a hell of a memory, but no, he's not a cop." He says he is. And so, I mean, that was the weirdest thing that I've ever had happen to me.
Wow. Man, oh man. So you're well guarded that night.
Yeah, I was well guarded that night. But yeah, there wasn't any incidents, and I never even think of that at all.
That's pretty strange. Well, I'm gonna tell my wife to look up you to see if you guys are related.
Probably, you never can tell.
It was
probably
off. She's got family in Elizabethtown. Her cousin lives in Elizabethtown, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just had a girl that was on my Facebook, and she had the last name, and I went, "That promoter." And I said, "Look, we're probably related, because that name is, it's, no. If you've got that name, we're related." And so we kind of find out we were, and she came up with Smith this last weekend, and she came up to the gig and, in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've got, it's like I just keep finding all these people that are related.
That's amazing.
And I can tell you your history.
Mm. Another guy who might be related to a lot of people is Jim Dandy. I had Jim Dandy on the show, you know, and we were talking about the same thing, and he knows Kentucky and Henderson, and, you know. And
well, I'll tell you a funny thing about Jim Dandy. There's a group called, we were on Stax Records.
Uh-huh.
We were the white division of the label. There was a thing called Hip.
Right.
And so they had the black, you know, with Otis Redding and all those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And then you had the white label. They only had two groups, South Pacific, us, and a group Mm-hmm. Well, Dan and I came out of the South with Step OB, and nobody else changed their name to Black Oak Arkansas.
Oh, man. That's cool. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, we all touch elbows at some point.
Definitely. Definitely. That's, well, hopefully a lot of that's in the book, Backstage Pass, which you can buy at Amazon, available now.
Are you on my website?
Yep.
If you'd like an autograph, I can autograph it.
Okay, I'll send you
my website, johnfordcoley.com.
I'll send you my address. Or I'll send it to Jeff, I guess. Yep. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you, John, for being on the show today, man. It's been a real pleasure. And
well, thank you so much. I appreciate you letting me be on here and binge you a little bit.
Well, it's been great. You're a great conversationalist. Good luck on both tours, Rock the Yacht Tour and your tour. I hope to catch you in Florida next time you're here.
That sounds good. Let me know if you're in the area, and we'll make sure you get to the show.
I sure will, man. I appreciate it. All right, John. Thank you. Take care.
Bye, man.
Bye-bye. For more information about John Ford Coley, visit www.johnfordcoley.com or www.facebook.com/John Ford Coley page. Purchase the latest release from John Ford Coley. I rated it 5 stars. Lots of great music. 2 CDs entitled Eclectic. You can buy that now at Amazon.com or on his website. Purchase Backstage Pass. Learn about the ins and outs and fun times of rock and roll and being on the road by John Ford Coley. You can also get his book at Amazon.com. The Rock the Yacht Tour is touring, featuring Ambrosia, Stephen Bishop, player lead singer Peter Beckett, John Ford Coley, Walter Egan, and Looking Glass. And they'll be bringing a boatload of greatest hits to a town near you. Very special thanks to Jeff Albright of Rockstar PR for arranging this interview with John Ford Coley, and of course the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, A True Story of a Neglected American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.